Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Merkel Media.
I guess it's time to go back in time.
Are you telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
I have a lot of memories of the past.
People are time traveling within themselves.
Time travel is possible.
I shoot the lights out till it's bright out. Oh, just another lonely night. Are you willing to sacrifice your life?
They're staying in the shadows. It's called probing. Make sure things are all clear.
Clear for what?
For the rest of the world.
You guys hear that?
He's out there.
Okay, I'll reload it.
I kinda like you.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You are listening to The Confessionals, a proud featured show on blogtalkradio.com. I am your host, Tony Merkel. Thank you for being with us this evening. If you've had an encounter or a story you'd like to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. That's theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the connection section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me. Just get a hold of me. Now, tonight, we're bringing on Gary Wayne again. Now, we did a show with Gary Wayne on the Nephilim, and we hinted at thinking about doing a show on CERN. Well, tonight's that night. We're going to be doing a show tonight on CERN, and Gary Wayne comes on to talk about the details of this facility in Geneva. Okay, tonight I have a great guest coming on, a returning guest. I have Gary Wayne coming on the show to talk about CERN. So last time we talked to Gary, he was on talking about Nephilim. And Gary, I'll tell you, people loved hearing about that show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very, very well and glad to hear that people enjoyed our talk about Nephilim. And it's, you know, kind of one of those fringe aspects of the Bible, but I think, you know, from my perspective, it's very, very important, and it just spews over into so many different aspects of prophecy and understanding the Old Testament. So really enjoyed the show the last time.
Yeah, I did too. And I wasn't sure. I never quite sure, you know, how people are going to react to some of those topics because, you know, I have a very mixed audience. So I have people who don't want to hear anything about the Bible. And I have other people who, if I say the wrong thing, they email me telling me how I'm wrong and stuff. So I wasn't sure how people would react to that show, but they really seem to love it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I find it fascinating. And, you know, the great thing about the giants is it's not just a Christian thing that is written about. I mean, it's in all cultures, all religions, all around the world. So, you know, and they're making discoveries of giants in North and South America, especially, you know, the recent ones with the Peruvian elongated skulls and the red hair. So it's a fascinating subject, and I think it's going to continue to get more interest, and more research is going into it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think as time goes on, just more and more information is going to be uncovered. I'm sure we'll have you back on for that as time goes on. But today we're talking about CERN. And, you know, I started talking to some people about the fact that we're going to be doing a show on CERN. And one of the main questions that it kind of caught me off guard was people are like, what is CERN again? And so I was kind of surprised that, you know, most people weren't totally sure exactly what CERN is. So today's show, we're going to be talking about CERN, but we're going to talk about the basics of CERN, kind of like, you know, the genesis of it and, you know, kind of some of the underlying symbolism that's involved here and things like that. So if you want, just take us away with, you know, what is CERN?
Well, for people that aren't familiar with CERN, this is located just outside of Geneva in Switzerland, and just an extraordinary amount of money is going into this science project. And it is a giant particle collider. And what they're doing is they're creating speed with these particles at a tremendous speed and colliding them. And what they're trying to do, at least from what they're putting out in terms of the news, is they're trying to figure out some of the beginnings to the Big Bang theory and or to the beginning of the universe, and looking to see what sort of happens when all of this sort of comes about. And so that's sort of the superficial story that people should understand, except that there is just so much money going into it. Then there's the occult aspects of its some symbolism. And then you have quantum computers associated with it as well. And there's not a lot of quantum computers that are out there today. There may be more. My information might be a couple of years old on quantum computing, but at that time there was maybe six or seven in the world, and they're using it in conjunction with CERN and for AI intelligence in other aspects. And so quantum computers tend to work in the subatomic level and in multiple dimensions. And that's one of the sort of the keys to being able to quantum compute. And what's important about that is when you're working at the quantum level is you can get to the subatomic level, and that's why they're trying to intermarry that up and have a computer that can work in different dimensions. So as a quick overview, that's what the at least the projected story is about CERN.
Wow, so the quantum computer is supposed to work in different dimensions. It sounds very paranormally to me, and if for science to be utilizing something like this, do they look at it that way? Do they look at this as something that they're diving into more of a paranormal realm, or do they have some kind of scientific way of looking at this?
Well, I think both, and I also would say there's a very much a religious sort of aspect to it. And so if you understand who some of the pioneers are in quantum computing, you know, whether or not it goes back all the way to, you know, Wolfgang Pauli. I mean, he saw his research through the occult, and particularly Carl Jung, or Jung, as I don't like slaughtering people's names, and through Eastern religions. And, you know, if you move a little bit more forward in terms of some of the more important scientists of doing research on quantum mechanics and quantum theory in the quantum world, you have people like Niels Bohr and Werner Heisenberg and a fellow by the name of of Schrodinger. And both Bohr and Schrodinger said that their experiments were consistent with what they learned in the Eastern Vedas, and that quantum mechanics, according to Heisenberg, you know, the quantum theory serves to make sense to people who have read the Vedanta. And then as you read more into what they speak and talk about, is they believe that the multiplicity of dimensions at the quantum level is completely consistent with the doctrine of the Upanishads. So pretty much, and as you move forward, anybody dealing with atomic theory is seemingly talking from a reference from Eastern religions, which is a very, very interesting perspective. Is if they believe that you need to understand the Vedas to understand quantum computing, which they say you do, and from the aspect that this now becomes not just a scientific experiment, it becomes more of a matter of a belief system, and you wonder which one is driving what and what they're actually trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to this stuff, it seems like the border between, you know, scientific minds and beliefs kind of gets very cloudy to me. It sounds like even the scientists themselves hold these certain beliefs that they're holding on to tightly, just like a Christian would. Like, it's going to be hard to convince a Christian that Jesus Christ isn't ever in existence. You know, like, it's going to be hard to do that because you hold on to those beliefs. And I feel like you're starting to see similar things on the scientific end of stuff. When it comes to the symbolism and things like that, I think the first thing when you mentioned symbolism to me, the whole logo of CERN, a lot of people say that there is symbolism there. Would you like to go into that at all?
Well, yeah, some people might get a little bit, you know, carried away with some of the symbolism in there, and they're projecting three sixes coming out of that. But typically, though, the most direct connection to the CERN logo and how the CERN collider actually looks is a stylized version of the god Shiva out of Eastern mysticism, which, again, is a rather interesting kind of connection. So as soon as you start talking about the god Shiva and Eastern mysticism, and now connect that to the beliefs of what many of the quantum particle theorists believe you need to read and understand to work in quantum physics, now you have another connection back to Eastern mysticism. And, you know, the god Shiva was the god of the underworld. And that's where things really start to move forward in that sort of occultic sort of manner. And then I think most people, if they, you know, I think it was out 2 or 3 years ago, there was a special ceremony at CERN and in the tunnel, and they had a lot of the workers all dressed up in these strange costumes that were very occultic and doing very much an occultic ritual that is just absolutely bizarre to watch. And again, you wonder, is this really cold, objective science, or does this have an agenda that is maybe a little bit more religious-based than what they're portraying it to be?
Yeah, I mean, with Shiva, you know, I think I heard somewhere that she's like the goddess of destruction or something like that. And then having her as a mascot to CERN, it kind of clouds your beliefs with science and things like that, with the whole tunnel opening and things like that. I mean, was that like a ritual, like almost like summoning Lucifer himself kind of thing? Because I've heard that.
Yeah, so people are thinking that they were trying to, elicit fallen angels and or demons and things like that. And perhaps they were. But this, as you dig into this theory of what they're trying to do, that not only a scientific but has a religious connection, is that they believe that this is more than just breaking down the particles. I'm going to talk a little bit about particles in, you know, hopefully before the show's over, because that's really important to understand and where they're thinking about how this relates to the Vedas. But also that multiple dimensions aspect, which is part of string theory and which is part of quantum theory now, and is also part of the Upanishads that we talked about. And so when you combine that with a quantum computer that works in different dimensions and can actually be in multiple dimensions at the same time, you have this sort of coming together of concepts that suggest that they're trying to do more than just break the particle down, that they're trying to open up some sort of gate to the to another universe or to another dimension. And that is very much related to Shiva and gods associated with it. But it is also part of a cult belief where they're trying to open the gates, and we're dealing with codes and systematic numerology and quantum type of programming. But from a geomancer perspective, from the occult, it's like a geomancer is someone who is like a gatekeeper who can create portals between the worlds. And they believe that in this occult belief system that the world is really like the universe is really like a projection from a quantum computer, which again ties into this understanding of why they need a quantum computer, and that the universe and the earth are basically cryptograms in this hologram, which are codes encoded into the universe, and they call that part of their sacred geometry. And that Earth is actually a sentient and an intelligent being of sorts, conforming to mathematical and geometric laws that, we don't fully understand. So there's this, like I say, there's just so much of this occult sort of overlay onto this experiment that you have to really dig into the two aspects of what they're doing. I think there are two goals. I think there's one for the particles, and then there's one that is for the gateway. So to sort of underline how prevalent this occult ideology is in it is that CERN actually goes back to a couple gods. And not only is it is related to Shiva, but from a Western perspective, you have a god that is in the Druidic pantheon, and his name is Cernunnos, Cernunnos. And this is a horn god. This is a god of the underworld. This is a god of the woodlands, and very much like the Hearn god that you see coming out of the Druidic religions. And so that name is really quite a coincidence. And then you go into the Etruscan, which is the culture before the Romans, whom inherit a lot of the Etruscan culture and religion. And you have another god called CERN, and there's none of that Unos on the end. It is just strictly CERN. And this, again, is pretty much an identical god with the Cernunnos god, in terms of being a god of nature and a horn god. I won't go into all the details of this rammed horn god, but it is also associated with Apollyon. And Apollo out of the Greek mythology, and Apollo can be spelled as Apollyon or Apollo. And Apollo is not only a sun god, but also the god of the underworld again. And what's interesting about Apollyon is it's associated with Revelation 9 and the abyss, and what gets released out of the abyss in the end time, noting that in Enoch, the book of Enoch, and what many people believe from a Christian religious perspective is that the abyss that the impassioned fallen angels who created the Nephilim that we talked about in the last show were locked into are going to be released in the end time as recorded in Revelation 9. And the leader of these really strange looking creatures that come out of the abyss in the end time is called Apollyon in Greek and Abaddon in Hebrew. And of course, Apollyon is the equivalent god in the Hindu religion, which is Shiva. So everything sort of comes full circle with that. And then there is a temple that is 3 kilometers from CERN. And it's called, and it's in St. Ginny's Pouilly. And Pouilly is a French name, and it derives as etymology from Apollyon. And this temple is dedicated to Apollyon. And so this Greek god of death, wow, and of the underworld, in a temple dedicated to Apollyon, who is out of the abyss in another dimension, is located 3 kilometers from CERN. And I just do not believe that is a coincidence.
Yeah, and I mean, they want you to think that, right? Because I'm sure you're not the only one that's brought that up, and I'm sure they've been confronted about that, and they just think that's, they just want to say that's a coincidence, right?
Yeah, it's just a coincidence, and there's no real attachment to it. But again, when you see them with that ceremony that was so occult in nature, you really wonder what they're trying to do. So, and this whole idea about reaching into other dimensions sort of goes back to the idea of is, are they trying to release the impassioned angels who created the giants before the flood, and perhaps again after the flood, and were locked away in the abyss for their violations against creation sooner than their ordained time? Is that what they're trying to do? Or is this sort of going to be a fulfillment of prophecy that finally when they get this done, that they can use this technology to release these fallen angels? And, you know, when we look at the Tower of Babel, and I won't spend a lot of time here, but Nimrod, after Babel, goes to Mesopotamia, and he's the father of the Babylonians, the Chaldeans, and the Akkadians as they descend down from a biblical perspective. And so when they recant the story in Akkadian of the Tower of Babel, they don't look at Babel as meaning confusion of languages as it means it to the Christians and coming out of the Hebrew translation. They translate it as El as in God, and Bab as in gateway. And again, people wonder whether or not what Nimrod was trying to do with the tower, as opposed to trying to reach into the sky, was he building something with technology that was trying to be a gateway to the gods? Because that's what Babel will translate from in Akkadian. And one again wonders whether or not that's what they're trying to do here.
All right, well, let's take a break right now. When we come back, we'll get back into it with you, Gary. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, what they tried doing before, they're just trying to do again. And you mentioned about the releasing of the fallen angels. I mean, I don't know. If they do it, I would say that that was probably the ordained time then. The Bible doesn't say, I mean, you might be able to correct me, but I don't think the Bible says how the angels will be released.
Well, through an angel falls from the sky. And some people look at that as another fallen angel with a key. But what's the understanding of a key? Is it a physical key to unlock them from the abyss prison? Or is the key some sort of mathematical cryptogram or code to release them that I was talking about in terms of using the quantum computers to crack the code, and as they believe in geomancy, and that they are gatekeepers through these codes and to the portals? So hard to know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that artificial intelligence plays any role into this? I mean, do you think artificial intelligence could be the you know, quote unquote, maybe angel that unlocks things or something like that? I mean, where do you stand on the whole artificial intelligence thing?
Well, again, if you look at what Google's doing with quantum computing and some other organizations, you need quantum computers to have artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And so you see a coming together of that, and then you have this use in multiple dimensions. So I guess the question gets to be is do you need a quantum computer to be that smart? To provide the artificial intelligence? And I'm thinking that's probably not the case, because right now these quantum computers, as powerful as they are in that they can store so much more knowledge. I mean, the last time I heard was like, 35 times over what all the particles are in the universe. So these are, what would take a supercomputer 500 years to calculate. This is a supercomputer, a quantum computer could do in less than a second. But it's not a wide-ranging capability at this point in time. Then they're using it more for surgical calculations and things like that. So, but it doesn't mean you couldn't develop the quantum computer beyond to be more than just sort of singularly focused. And they probably will. But at this time, it suggests that although it can do calculations at a speed that is just unimaginable, it's hard to understand how they would project an artificial intelligence that way. Unless, of course, it goes to the second part of what I think they're trying to do at CERN. So maybe it's time I talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so, and again, it will start sort of in the Eastern mysticism that the scientists seem to be heavily involved in, and in the Vedas. And also understand that in this particle collider, they're trying to break things down at the quantum level. And there's a lot of thought that they're looking for something. Some people call it the God particle. And there's a few other names that are attached to it. And sort of superficially, it's more what they're talking about is something at the Big Bang, but not really if you get down into their belief systems. And so in the Vedas, they believe, and also in Taoism, they believe in a different kind of particle. And many believe, and I think, that they're probably looking for this particle. And it's called the Atma, and that's spelled A-T-M-A. And in other versions, it's Atman, A-T-M-A-N. And what it is a particle that, they haven't been able to find, and they can't really see. But they know it's there, they think, because of what it does. And so it has different properties than most subatomic particles. And they believe that this Atma particle contains a soul or a consciousness. So you can start to see a connection into AI here. And that it also has eternal knowledge. And the two aspects of godhood, which they're going to, I think, try and present in the end time, is some sort of immortality in the physical world and knowledge. And those are the two bases of mystical religions on how you're going to become a god, immortality and knowledge, and to be able to discipline that knowledge. And this particle core does not degrade in any way. And in the quantum level, you have what they call quantum entanglement, so that whether it's in a different dimension or at other ends of the universe, they're entangled and they can transfer information instantaneously, and they can be in more than one dimension and more than one spot. That's all part of quantum theory. And it doesn't have any more elemental particles to it. And it doesn't merge with particles. It manipulates these other particles. It works through them. And so this is the God particle that is the living life force that they're searching for, that works through all of these particles, that stores all of the knowledge in the universe, that communicates it instantly all over the place, to all aspects of the multiple universes. And it animates particles so that they actually vibrate, which is, again, part of that new age vibration. And all particles vibrate, by the way, for the most part. And vibrating to a level of, they call into the harmonic convergence, which will give them godhood. But also with the aspect of being able to access this God particle that stores all of the knowledge. So one wonders, as they do AI, are they trying to find this particle that they call the God particle or the Atma to assist in creating of the artificial intelligence?
So if they find this particle, how dangerous could that be for, I guess, humanity, really?
Well, anytime we get over our skis and we do that too much and we don't have the wisdom and we don't understand the power, bad things can happen. And I think that's part of this coming together with the end time. And that when you have at the mark of the beast and the Antichrist, I think there's a good case to be made that they're going to be offering godhood for you to take this oath, to take this mark. And this mark has something to do with quantum computing and at the subatomic level, and it may actually change your DNA somewhat or be a violation somehow against the laws of creation, because in the Bible, there's only one sin that you're not going to be forgiven for, and that is sins against the Holy Spirit or blasphemies against the Holy Spirit, depending on which translation that you're looking at. And that's very, very strange, because you have these fallen angels in the abyss who they're trying to get these fallen angels out, I think, for violating the laws of creation, who aren't going to be forgiven and are going to burn in the lake of fire forever at the end of, at the time of the judgment and the end of the 1,000 years. And you have these people who take the mark in the Bible who will also not be forgiven for taking the mark and will burn in the lake of fire with their the gods that they followed. And no other peoples are said to be sentenced to that. So I think this whole mark and artificial intelligence and changing things at the quantum level are about violating the laws of creation and presenting a godhood format in the physical universe between knowledge and immortality. And then when you start mixing in all the different kinds of transhumanism that you can have, whether or not it's a creation from fallen angels to create supermen, whether or not it is DNA manipulation, whether or not it is some sort of bionic parts, whatever you want to call it, that they're working hard to do, right, and including cloning, and you match that up with the access to the knowledge of the universe, and you have those two things that they can offer in the physical world to stand up against the God of the universe and rebel, just as they like to do with their allegories in Star Wars.
So it sounds to me like almost they're pursuing this in a sense as a, I don't know if it's such a basic word to use, but as a weapon gearing up for battle against God himself.
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, we are advancing at a level that is unprecedented, unless you believe that before the flood, they were actually more advanced than what we were before the flood wiped out that civilization. And that's certainly possible. Certainly from what Jesus said, that, you know, days of the end time and his second coming would be like the days of Noah. And if their technology through the sciences that they develop in the Antediluvian Epoch, the seven sacred sciences that Freemasonry, you know, likes to promote, and are the same sciences that are developing at extraordinary levels today, were combined in the Antediluvian Epoch from the illicit knowledge from heaven, as so many other accounts, and whether or not it's the Book of Enoch or religions around the world coming from the gods, that if we're not in the end time quite yet, then that means their technology was more advanced than what ours is today. And so I think we could be seeing a repeat of that.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, I was going to ask you what your thoughts were on that, because I tend to lean towards the idea that we do have lost technology or lost knowledge on certain things that we're starting to come back around to learning again and understanding that we had, you know, in the antediluvian world. And it sounds like, if I'm reading you right, that's kind of like where you're leaning towards as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think they did develop the sciences, and with the help of the gods or the fallen angels or the ancient aliens, whichever perspective you want to come from that on, and developed and created monuments to those beings that they either worshipped or were being helped by them, that we can't even think about doing today, and in locations we couldn't do in today, like Machu Picchu, for example. It's like, how would we even think about doing that today? So they had a technology that was very, very, very advanced. And we get from, you know, the Bible that the whole world was corrupt, not just violent, but the whole world was corrupt. And I think my speculating and theory on is as I match all that information up is that they were not only violating the laws of creation from angels mating with humans and possibly other animals to create some of these fantastic beasts of prehistory that comes out of mythology, but also changing the genomes and the plant world, and also cross-pollinating DNA, manipulating DNA before the flood. And so they corrupted the whole world in that manner. And we're at the cusp of being able to do all of that today. I don't think that that's a coincidence.
No, not at all. And I kind of come from the idea as well that, like, when it comes to the whole mark of the beast, like you were talking about earlier, I do think that it's going to be technological. It's not going to be, because I think when I was a kid, it was commonly discussed as, you know, oh, you're going to get a tattoo or something like that. Like, I think it's technological, and it's something to do with changing our DNA itself. And it's now you're dealing with the transhumanism aspect of things, where you're no longer human.
Yes. They're going to create the new man, right? That, and it's going to be probably reserved for only selected people, and that's the elite in, you know, the people with the spark of the divine, or the thousand points of light. And, you know, one thing that I didn't make a connection to previous, but this might interest some people that are listening, is that in the Book of Enoch, you have the leader of the Watchers who create these Nephilim and gets locked away in the abyss is Azazel. And Azazel is very much similar to the god Pan. And Pan and Azazel seem to be, as they have different names across different cultures and languages, seems to be that god Apollo and Abaddon, the one who is the destroyer of the ancient world. And so I wonder whether or not this Azazel is actually this Apollyon. And again, if that is a true connection, then you have, you know, almost a full circle of worldwide testimony talking about the same events in prehistory.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let me hear this right. You said Azazel is possibly known as Pan. Is that how I
heard? Yeah, because the Pan god is the same god as Apollo, and is again another sort of nature god and a horn god. He's got a whole bunch of different other aspects that I won't go into. But yeah, I think very much you can make the case that the Pan god is the same god as CERN and Apollo, and thus Azazel as well.
All right. Well, I mean, because you just said that you won't go into, but I'm going to ask you a question, because I did hear, I can't remember what I heard about Pan, but is Pan like some kind of perverted god? I can't remember exactly what I heard.
Yeah, so this is a half human, half goat. So you have a similarity to Azazel, just as all the other gods were horn gods, right? They're like goat gods that I mentioned earlier. And it's a god who plays the flute, right? Just as you have in the fairy tale of the Pied Piper, you know, leading people away. He's called Peter Pan as an allegory in another fairy tale. And that is a very much a chosen allegory of fairy tales, because fairy tales are very much connected with the occult. And so the connection on that is that the god Pan would fly at night with his Peter erect. And now you have a fairy tale named Peter Pan, and he would seduce and have sex with young nymphs, which is, again, what Azazel would do, right? And so you have Wendy as a nymph in Peter Pan. So all of a sudden you start going into this netherworld, and this world that they escape to is a land where you never grow old, and it's in another dimension, just as Azazel was locked in another dimension in the abyss. And so you see this complete allegory sort of playing out. I won't completely tell the whole story of Peter Pan today, but and so the god Pan is also the fertility god, of the woodlands, and a horn god, as I mentioned, and he has pointed ears, which, again, Peter Pan has pointed ears. And, the green aspect of Peter Pan reflects that wood nature god that Peter Pan is. And Azazel is son of Zeus, which is sort of the head of the Greek pantheon, and Azazel would also be a son of, a son of God as well, or an angel. And so you see all of these allegories connected to Pan.
Yeah, and see, that's what I find so amazing. I know I don't know if we are veering off course or not, but we're just going to keep going with it. Because when I heard about Pan and what Pan is all about, and just like what you just laid out, it sounds like there's some kind of link. It seems like everything kind of comes back around full circle. And to me, it seems like there's some kind of link to Satanism. I've heard that part of satanic worship. That's the thing let me ask you this. I hear so many different things evolving, like Satanism, and some, I guess, sects of Satanism don't do certain things that others do. But I do know that I've heard that, part of satanic worship can involve child molestation, things like that. Do you think that Pan has a direct link to that at all?
I think so. And Pan or Azazel or the many other names for this god that they might worship him as in their occult rituals, has that sort of direct relation. And I think they have at the adept level, at the mystic level, not at the lower levels of mysticism or the secret societies, but at the adept levels, they have all sorts of these bizarre and not very good things to think about in terms of their rituals, not only in terms of pedophilia, orgies to please their gods, but also in sacrifice and blood drinking and all sorts of other perversions. So it's not just rumor. It's actually part of the occult religion, which they perpetuate, that goes back into the mists of time again.
Yeah, and you see these things come through in nowadays with your leadership throughout the different nations, and you have CERN dealing with a lot of these different gods and goddesses, and with even in the United States, and the rumors and that the leadership is, there are certain leaders that are involved in satanic worship. To me, it seems like everything kind of comes back around full circle to this struggle of power of good and evil.
It is. And we've been presented as science as just being knowledge, right? And objective. And it really never has been. I mean, it could be, but there's a bias to it. Just as, the age of modern science begins in about 1660 with what they call inside the craft, the last of the sorcerers and the first of the scientists. And that's where Freemasonry and Rosicrucian comes together to form the Royal Society that all science reports to and has respect for even to this day. And the Royal Society had, has the same goals at that time, and they still do today, as what Enoch and Lamech and Tubal-Cain and Jabal, who is the big patriarch of Masonry, of the seven sciences, and their patriarchs of Masonry and the secret societies go back to these people, as they say, in their writings and their legends and their history, to the people that I just named. That is the descendants of Cain, not from the Seth line, in case somebody's wondering, and the names are similar. You have Lamech and Enoch, which are identical, for example, in both lineages. And what they were trying to do with the sciences at that point in time, in which they again began in about 1660 with the start of the Royal Society, was to lead people away from God. and to not give God of the universe credit for anything, the creation of it, any good that happens in it. They're not going to give him credit for anything. And to worship and honor the pantheon of the gods who gave them the illicit knowledge and the sciences and developing of the sciences. And they would build great monuments to honor them that we see coming out of prehistory. And this is the same thing that's been transferred to the start of the development of the seven sciences, and it's the seven liberal sciences that they like to promote. Everybody knows and has heard of them. They just don't know where they came from and how they're developing them. And they're developing with a specific bias, just as philosophy will come out of the first three sciences, and that's what's going to be the one that guides them in the belief system. And out of these seven sciences in the development was the creation of the mystical religions and the secret societies who partnered with the fallen angels to create the Nephilim, who usurped the antediluvian world and whose dynasties usurped the royal dynasties after the flood. And so when we look at what's being done in science today, it's all done with a preconceived agenda. And if you fall outside of that agenda or preconceived narrative, you don't get funding, you get persecuted. And the level of that persecution goes up if you're trying to insert anything like in, let's say, in the creation aspect in an intelligent design. Anything that has to do with creation design is automatically eliminated. And, science is supposed to be cold and objective and consider all things. But and just as when you see in archaeology that if they have a discovery that doesn't fit the preconceived narrative, they call that an upart, an out-of-place artifact, and they just ignore it. So we don't have this cold secular science. And then if you peel back even further and you understand that it's this, the Rosicrucians, who are one of the creators of the Royal Society, is one of the main secret society groups that is polytheist, and the Freemasons will answer to them in the hierarchy, but they're the ones who have preserved the Western religion of this, what we understand as Eastern mysticism and polytheism, that they call Gnosticism. And then they created theosophy to be the bridge that was going to be the religion for the end time, that would bridge science and religion back together. And this is the religion that's behind the founding of modern science.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and we'll be right back. You know, do you think that there's a possibility that we could ever really have a non-biased scientific examination of these things? Because I feel like as they uncover things that might not go with their preconceived scientific notions, they, like you said, ignore it.
Yeah, I don't think so, because there's so much control over it now. I mean, you won't get funding unless you're going to go out and research what they want the answers to. And if you come back to with the wrong answers, you won't get any more funding. And so there seems to be less and less tolerance to research outside the box, let alone less and less tolerance for free speech, period, that seems to be going on. And it's quite frightening as to how we see that ramping up in its intensity. So I don't think in this world we can expect an unbiased use of knowledge and science. And I would also say that in this world, and some people may find this odd for me to say it, but let's say if we had a world dominated by a Christian church, I don't think that would be biased or unbiased as well. I think it would become corrupted. I think anything we do in this world is going to be corrupted.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Do you think that all the things that are going on at CERN, the things that they're doing, do you think that all the scientists that are there are in the know of what they're doing, or do you think there's a lot of ignorance being played amongst the, the everyday, quote unquote, everyday scientists that work there?
The everyday scientist may not be included in terms of the agenda and the forces behind the funding and what they're trying to accomplish. I think when you get to be, you know, the leaders of the scientists, I think at that point you've already been initiated through the Royal Society or through different secret societies, and you're already into mysticism, and you're fully bought into what you're trying to do. But I think just as in all secret society structures, you have, let's take Freemasonry as the classic, because most people are familiar with that. And you have a third degree, which is the York Rite, and 33 degrees that are in the Scottish Rite. And at the third degree in New York and the 33rd degree in the Scottish Rite, you become an adept. You become illuminated. And the Illuminati is what is at the center of illuminated Freemasonry. But below that, you don't have all the knowledge. You don't, in fact, you're told mostly half-truths and lies, and it's, they don't really know what's going on at the top. And only at the top, as you become initiated as an adept, do you learn the true secrets and the true agenda. So I think that works through the whole organizational structure, including scientists.
Okay. You know, this is kind of like shifting gears a little bit, but this was a question that was submitted here. It says, there have been some meteorological phenomena around CERN, specifically the time CERN has events. Does the activity bear any weight on the environment around it? So I guess basically saying, the things that are going on at CERN, does that have any kind of reaction to the environment around CERN?
Well, you can only speculate, but I think for, you know, anytime you have an action, you have an equal, you know, reaction to it. I think that's basic science. So if you're dealing with things that go back to the creation of the universe, if you're dealing with things that are going to enter into multiple dimensions, then, yeah, you ought to see some sort of unexplained feedback coming back to the exercise of those experiments. And the other thing that tends to go along with CERN and other high-level research areas is a higher level of alien sightings in terms of unidentified objects that seem to be around those areas that seem to have an interest, I suppose, is sort of the thought. Whether or not that's all true and that's proven, I mean, again, I'm only presenting what people say about it, but I think the answer, you know, simple answer to the question is yes.
Yeah. Well, along those lines of, you know, the different, you know, sightings of aliens and stuff like that around it, is there any possibility that they're opening up some kind of black hole or wormhole that would be allowing things like that to come through in that area?
Yeah, I think so. And basic alien, ancient alien mythos and alien mythos is that they do come through portals, right? And portals is a significant part of the occult world. And, you know, you've got, and it's throughout fairy mythology as well, and they guard these portals to the other world or Anwin or to Tartarus or to other dimensions. And so not only do you have sort of flying saucers coming through these portals through the oceans and certain places around the world, but you also have these, what they call fairy domens that are located on all continents around the world. And they're kind of these mini Stonehenge sites. So you've got these rocks that are standing up and then they're capped with other huge sort of rocks. And they're called fairy domens, and domen translates as portal. And again, it just, it's one of those constants that's in all sort of religions and mythologies around the world, is this idea of going through these portals into other dimensions. And just as fairies guard these portals. So yeah, I think it's certainly a possibility that whether or not they're actually aliens as they're going to be presented to us are the ones going through these portals. I think there's some significance to that for sure.
All right, I have another question here. It was submitted by one of our patrons, and he says, Luke says, is CERN privately funded?
Well, there is private funding, but there's also a lot of government funding as well.
Okay, so definitely the government has their hands in it.
Yes, it's a private public project.
Okay, that's kind of contradictory to me. Private but public. Private but public.
Some people used to call that National Socialism when they worked like that. But I'm not gonna project the Nazi overlay on CERN. I don't think we quite see that. Although you can take the Nazis back to the occult. But anyways,
yeah, sure.
I digress.
If you want to dive into that, I'm sure there's a YouTube video somewhere that you can watch. So I wanted to ask you, you know, Stephen Hawking, I heard that he's very concerned about CERN. Have you heard that? And what was some of his concerns with it?
No, I haven't heard what his concerns are. But if there's somebody listening that would like to pose that up as to what he's saying. I've not heard his concerns about CERN. I have heard that he's quite concerned about artificial intelligence. So maybe that's kind of what it's around.
Okay, well, maybe that's what it is. Yeah. I'm assuming his concerns with artificial intelligence are pretty much the same that I would have is, you know, pretty much we're all going to get killed by robots one day. You
know? Yeah, I think we've all seen at least one movie and we all know how that turns out.
Yeah. I mean,
it just seems obvious that there's lines that, you know, you just can't cross, but we don't seem to have those reins on anymore. We just seem to be developing science and knowledge for development.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I feel like just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And I feel like we're pushing the line where, I mean, it just, to me, there's certain inevitabilities that are going to come with the advancement of certain technologies. And when it comes to artificial intelligence, like even for me personally, my own everyday job, I'm a truck driver. And I can't tell you how many times I find articles of the, you know, Peterbilt, Freightliner, these different trucking companies coming out with trucks that drive themselves. And I'm thinking, we're inventing ourselves out of jobs. And eventually, we're going to have to get a check from the government every month because there's not going to be any jobs to have.
Yeah, I just don't understand this whole ideology of putting people out of work. And they keep telling us these half-truths that, well, you're just going to be doing a different job. But no matter what, there's less and less good jobs as we go. It's like, it's almost like they're saying, hey, we want to create, you know, a world of slaves because we are going to drive them down into poverty because there won't be any good jobs left.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it continues. It's like, and you can put controls on that.
Right. It's just, I feel like we have to just keep pushing the envelope. You know what it is? It's that once you have access to this kind of technology and stuff, there's always going to be that one person that has the ability to, that is willing to push the envelope and see how far you can go. Even though you kind of know where it's going to go in the end, you just have to see if you can do it. Like, I just want to see if I can actually do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you look at, you know, the creation of the atomic bomb. Right. And, you know, and this is a destroyer of worlds. And I think the world's done a very good job of containing it. But the longer time goes on, you wonder what happens with somebody like, you know, the leader of North Korea, who has seemingly, several working bombs. And once he has the ability to deliver it, will he do that? Because typically, that's what happens, right? Once you develop the knowledge, it will be used.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of my biggest concerns with CERN, pardon the pun. But it's just that, you know, there's certain things that I feel like we just shouldn't be messing with. And the things that I'm hearing that's coming out of CERN is definitely worrisome, to say the least. And I don't know. I there's nothing that I can do about it personally, but it does worry me. But really, it's not going to do me any good worrying about it.
Yep. Yeah. And even if it's not some of the things that we've been talking about on this show, it's they don't know what they're going to find or what's going to be a consequence thereof. And, you know, when you're pushing to those kinds of levels where you don't know that, that just seems to me like we're not ready to cross that threshold.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Well, Gary, I really appreciate you coming on the show today and kind of sharing some things about CERN, just giving us a very basic, fundamental understanding of what CERN is and how things operate a little bit.
Terrific. And I always love talking about CERN, and it's been a little bit quiet lately on developments kind of coming out of there that I'm aware of, but watching it like a lot of people are and seeing where it actually goes, and also watching, that development of the quantum computer and AI, because I think they're all sort of interconnected where science is going.
Yeah. Now, before we get out of here, where can people get a hold of you? I know we mentioned it on the show before, but where can people find you if they want to ask you questions?
If you can get a hold of me through Facebook under Gary Wayne and or Genesis 6 Conspiracy Pages. And I also have a group if you want to join that, Gary Wayne and the Genesis 6 Conspiracy. You can just look for that on Facebook, or you can get a hold of me through my website and email me questions or comments. And that's the Genesis6Conspiracy.com, Genesis 6 with the number 6, Conspiracy.com. And if you do ask me a question, I will definitely get back to you.
Yeah, and I can vouch for that. I mean, you're very active on Facebook, and you do keep a tab on what's going on with your material. There's been times that I'll share one of your things, and you've actually seen it, and you comment, thanks for sharing. So you are very active, and you socialize with people, and I think that's a great thing for somebody with your knowledge to be able to just kind of interact with people and share what you know.
Terrific, and that's what it's all about, is getting the information out there and having people develop that information.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, I really appreciate you coming on today. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something. I know I did. And before we get out of here, I just want to let everybody know, on April 14th, 2018, I'm going to be in Canonsburg at the Frank Saris Library. I'll be helping to host a town hall meeting where people are going to come out and share their local encounters with Bigfoot. I'm going to have some people coming out where they're going to share their story on what they saw locally in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. And it's going to be a great time. Doug Waller is going to be there speaking, sharing a lot of detail, information that he's gathered about Bigfoot. I highly encourage people to make plans to come out to the Frank Saris Library in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania on April 14th, 2018. I'll be there. I'm traveling 5 hours to be there. So if you're within a 5-hour radius, I would highly encourage you to set some time aside, make the trip out and check things out. Meet me, meet Doug, and have a good time. Anyways, I hope you guys have a great week. Take care, stay safe, and I'll see you right here next Saturday night on The Confessionals. Bye, everybody. I'm sorry.
power to take a hold. I need a one dance, got a Hennessy in my hand. One more time before I go, higher powers take a hold.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.